we are heart-centered humans. And so I think FounderMade has something that it's not just about, it's not a transactional show. It's not a transactional company. It's really about the inspirational story. Go towards the love and you will have a spectacular business. Even when the going gets tough, you'll something really special. May take longer than you think.
Welcome to the B2B Breakthrough Podcast. We're here to bring you all the best knowledge, insights, and strategies from e-commerce experts, successful business owners, and the team at Alibaba.com that you'll need to grow your business and achieve your next big breakthrough. I'm your host, Sharon Guy. Our guest today is Megan Asha, the founder of FounderMade, a platform that revolutionizes how consumer brands connect with retailers and scale their businesses. She transformed a simple series of networking dinners into a multi-million dollar enterprise, now part of the global B2B media company, Tarsus Group. Megan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
So I've read a lot about you, and you've been described as the fairy godmother of emerging brands, a title that speaks volumes about your passion and commitment. Can you tell us a little bit about the moment or the experience that deeply impacted you and solidified your desire to help other entrepreneurs succeed?
Here's the philosophy that I think is really interesting that I think anybody, no matter what business you're in or just being a human on earth, we are all mini gods building our own reality. And human ingenuity and being able to take an idea and turn it into something is something that is one of the most magical things about being a human. So for me, I think that was just the realization of everything that we've ever had a thought of, we can create and we can build. And so for me, helping entrepreneurs on their path, and it's never an easy path. I don't care who you are or what it is. If there's an entrepreneur that's saying it's easy, then they're probably not actually doing it. Helping them on that path was the light bulb moment for FounderMade and really what I wanted to dedicate my time on earth doing.
So you first started off in investing in the connectivity space, as I had seen. How did you transition from that, which is very, it has its own players in that ecosystem, to the world of CPG?
The way that FounderMade started, I started a dinner series, and it was really about connecting certain brands and really bringing it to fruition. And I also thought, I'm a little too young to be doing Shark Tank and being the sharks. So I wanted to operate and really be in it. And I realized, as much as I love investing and I really enjoy being an angel investor and investing in funds, I really love the operations and I love the story of the founder. So transitioning from that piece, which was the investor front, to FounderMade, it was pretty seamless. And we actually started as an investor conference. My first business that I sold was very close to TechCrunch. And so I'd seen the ecosystem of TechCrunch Disrupt build when it had started and said, there's nothing in technology, the buyer and the seller and the investors in the tech, but for brands, where's the ecosystem and where's the community? And so for us, it's really about building the greater ecosystem of consumer brand building and anything from start to acquisition. And we've seen companies in our ecosystem not be able to afford a trade show booth and then sell their company for $500 million plus in a very short amount of time because brands at scale, they can really scale quickly, especially with e-commerce.
And digital and things going viral online these days. So it started as a series of networking dinners, and then it became that investor conference, and then it became a company? Or what was that entire transition like?
It's interesting because I've had friends that just quit their job completely. I'm a little bit more earned the right to quit your job. After business school, I was working in venture capital and then consulting for a few startups. And so originally it started as a dinner series. And I just was like, I love doing this. This is what my heart's desire. I would do this for free. I didn't think I could actually make a business out of it. And then from there, every time I would do a dinner, I'd say, well, what was the deliverable? What was the execution? What was the point of us doing this? And then we turned it into an investor summit, had no idea anything about trade shows, and then brought in a CFO who had helped scale a consumer electronics show, had sold a bunch of trade show companies, and realized that that was the business model, which was building as efficient as possible the next generation trade show for consumer brands, where we help them connect with retailers, investors, media in a very efficient way. We do that online and then we do that in person and live as well.
So from the website, it seems like it started off in New York and then expanded into many, many different cities. Is that the major part of what FounderMade is about, or is there a hidden side of that community to then have a glimpse of and participate in?
I mean, yeah, I think once you've been to a FounderMate show or you've been a part of any of our online events and media, you're part of the community. So we're about business school for brands. We're about helping educate the wider community on what the next generation tools, resources, and of course, the most innovative products in the world.
And I saw that Targus was recently acquired by Informa. So are you now sucked into the Informa whole place? Because I'm a keynote speaker and I've worked with Informa in their events. And from what I have seen, the Informa world, the types of events that they're producing is quite traditional. They're usually getting panelists or speakers from very large, very Fortune 500, legacy, traditional power player companies. And then the founder-made sort of suite of companies are very disruptive. They're usually more on the startup side. Has that changed your company in terms of DNA or culture? And what has that transition been like?
The interesting part is I think it's just very additive because we're such a different business portfolio. And Informa is a $12 billion plus trade show behemoth. It's been a great transition. I always laugh because I feel like I'm in my next phase in this school. In case studies in business school, you always read about M&A and how it all works. And it's just been really an interesting transition. But the good news is we're so additive because there's nothing like that in our portfolio.
And I would imagine that that's probably why they were really interested in acquiring you and having that part of that family. What do you think is some problems that is in the event planning space or the event planning industry that companies like Informa have not yet had a chance to solve?
I think it's just very different. So if you look at media and how media didn't have the ROI it does now, because now you can actually quantify media. You can say, okay, I pay X for Facebook ads, and then there's a funnel and you can actually see where your spend is. So what I think is happening in trade shows and what I think the future of trade shows is that every dollar that you spend on a trade show or exhibit, you will figure out if there's actually an ROI on the spend. So I actually think our model of being more intimate, more thoughtful of our audience. And again, I think that the bigger trade shows are awesome in terms of getting that ROI, the ROI that sometimes you really need, especially the highest level audience, because a lot of times executives, we have Harold Hamilton coming to our next event and Naomi Watts coming to this beauty summit that we're doing next week. And they're not showing up at a 200,000 person trade show unless they're on the stage, but they're not going to show up and have that type of intimacy, right? So making sure that we are still the curators and that there is that ROI. We also have one-on-one meetings that we offer. We also do annual partner programs. So that I think is really additive. And I think that's where trade shows are going to go. And as operationally efficient as you get on that is where the most value of where that lies.
What are some of your favorite trade shows to go to? Like, do you have a calendar that's January is this, February is that, and then you sort of just go through it through the year? Or like, how do you manage your travel to these events?
It really runs a gamut, but there's so many great trade shows. There's a lot of great consumer product trade shows all around the world. I like also the curated ones where you're building business. Like, I'm hosting an event with Richard Branson at Necker Island in August. And that's like a very curated, it's very wellness related. It's like whoever wants to try to bike and swim and do all of these things with Richard Branson, who's way more athletic than anyone at that age or at any age, actually, I shouldn't even say. Every event has its heart and its thing that you go to, and you go to it for a reason. And there's so many great events out there. So I think it's also choose your own adventure, especially at what your stage and your business needs are.
I went to a recent event that I think he made like a 5-second appearance called Summit. And I thought that Summit is also a new take on just events in general, because they're not so much a conference, not so much a festival, but it's sort of two things mishmashed in one. And it's like another type of model. And I've always felt that events is a marketplace very similar to what Alibaba.com is. You have on the left side people that have a certain need, like a buyer. And then on the right side, there's a group of sellers, and you're creating that space to have these two parties meet each other in the right way. So there are so many different e-commerce conferences, communities. What do you think it is about FounderMade that attracts the first entrepreneur to want to come and check it out?
I think that we're all driven by heart and the heart of the story. At the end of the day, we are heart-centered humans. And so I think FounderMade has something that It's not just about, it's not a transactional show. It's not a transactional company. It's really about the inspirational story, almost like the war story of the entrepreneur, because that's what I built this business on. I always looked to my friends who are entrepreneurs and saw how some of them had to sleep on couches, how they lost everything, how they really went and just continued with positive perseverance. And they were able to create absolute magic with their business when they persevered. So I think that's our differentiator, is our team has heart, the people that we bring in. I always say, go towards the love in everything and you will have a spectacular business. So go towards the clients that love you the most, go towards the mission that you love the most. And if you follow that through line, even when the going gets tough, you'll still be able to transcend and build something really special. May take longer than you think. It may be harder than you think, but that's the law of the universe.
Through all of these different entrepreneurs and founders that you've met, are there certain ones where the story has really stuck with you? Or have you seen any founder stories where the first founder made series one that they're coming into, they absolutely starting with nothing. And then by founder made five, that they've just completely transformed their business. Any stories or examples like that?
I have two stories. One is Hero Cosmetics. She couldn't even afford a booth. I mean, she bought a booth at our first show or one of our first years and then sold her company for a couple hundred million. I think every 3 seconds they sell a pimple patch off TikTok. So incredible way of what she was able to do, the vision and just the commitment on that. And then in terms of entrepreneurs that I just have always been really awe-inspired by, Bobby Brown, she's been a speaker and she's probably one of the best humans I've met in business. So responsive, so incredible. I don't know if you've read any of her bio, but she had sold her company, had to wait to start any other makeup brand for, I think it was like 30 years. So she really couldn't start another business. Literally had like on her necklace the date that she was able to finally not be able to start another makeup business. And she started Joe's Road. And I just think her journey and even just who she stands for and how she stands for beauty and knowing like at any age, you're at the perfect age, knowing that at any race, color, shape, size, you're perfect just as you are. I just love her mission. I love that you can start at any age, how transparent she is about her life. And I think that that just goes to show being an entrepreneur is also being a creative. You know, you're very invested in your business. I don't know any entrepreneur that's selling that. Like, it's your baby. You're putting your baby idea out into the world and it's precious to you. And so to have people like that at any age, building better with more mission, more transparency, and more truth, that's just something that everyone should be inspired by. And take her as an example. I love all the news stories about how everyone becomes billionaires in their 20s and blah, 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 blah. But like really on average, you don't hit your stride until your 40s, 50s, 60s, and hopefully beyond, because we're all living longer and we should be inspired every day. We shouldn't just be like, oh, I want to retire. I'm working towards retirement. We should be saying, oh my gosh, what problem can we solve in the world? How will we make it better? Where is the world going? How are we going to leave it for our children?
I do find that even just in the world of entrepreneurship, what's most inspiring is other founder stories or other people's stories of their trials and tribulations and what they went through. When entrepreneurs walk into your door, what do you find as their most common problem that they want to be solving when they come to a founder-made event?
All types. I think retail distribution is something that is not just the distribution, but the guidance on it. How do you pitch to retailers? When to go into Sephora, when to go into the bigger Costco, the mass, because if you go into quickly, I've seen brands completely not have cash flow, their terms all get screwed up. So I think that one of the pieces, and this is like really the mission of Founder Made, is how do you connect the entrepreneurs that have playbook or the executives that have the playbook or the investors that have the playbook and have them connect? Because at the end of the day, if you know the playbook, it gets a lot easier. I thought Founder Made was just a dinner series and I was going to try to do a technology company because my background's in technology. And so when I was in trade shows, if I didn't have the CFO that I brought in who knew the trade show business, I don't think we would have been acquired. I definitely know that we would have been acquired because he knew the playbook. And it was so helpful to have someone who has had the experience to show. And again, entrepreneurs do have to listen to their gut and listen to not everybody, even if they have experience, has the right answer. You know your business better than anyone else. But if you can find people, just like when you go to college, if you're learning a skill, you should learn from others. And part of learning from others is also emotionally and being able to understand that it's really hard to start a business and have it be successful. It's really hard to get that $1 in. It's really hard to get to $1 million in revenue. It's really hard to get to five. Like every stage, there's like, just like when you're running a marathon, every stage is a little bit painful and a little awe-inspiring until you get to the marathon goal. And even that is like, whoa, that's crazy. And then you want to do ultra marathons if you're anyone like me.
Why do you think that playbook is something that is so hard for, I guess, an entrepreneur to look at and download and study?
I think that we overcomplicate things as humans sometimes, especially if we're nervous or we're in a state of fear. And doing anything new is fearful. We come out into this world, we don't know how to walk, talk. And then humans learn all these different things, and then they build off of generational DNA, and they're able to expand on things. But within all of those changes and with all of the movement towards progress, there's fear. How could you not be scared? It's new. And so to be able to have other people guiding you that have been there before, that can calm you down a little bit when you're hiking the hill, that's helpful. And again, you still have to hike the hill. You still have to put the work in. But I think that's part of everybody's mission in the world is, okay, I learned this. How can I give it back to someone? We all really thought about that because we all have lessons that we learned on Earth or things that were really challenging that we overcame. If we could all give that type of wisdom and guidance to the next generation or to somebody in need, like how beautiful would this world be?
And I think that's definitely the value that I see with communities and just a gathering of people who's solved the same problem and are now in a position to give that wisdom to maybe people that are younger than them in another different industry, but has that similar problem. I think sometimes even the problem seems to get smaller when you meet somebody else who has the same problem as you, just from being in their presence.
There is power in vulnerability, and everyone should be more vulnerable and more transparent.
So I got to know Brené Brown through all of the speaking things. And that's obviously one of her big things is how do we start from a place of vulnerability and transfer that more and more to other leaders? Because in the past, I think, couple of decades, or at least I grew up with this certain notion of what leadership should look like. You have to wear this certain thing, be a certain way. You have to be a bit more maybe boxed up or closer to what that thing looks like versus just being more authentically yourself and going to a more vulnerable spot in you. Or at least I've found that it's easier to break down other people's walls also when you're voluntarily vulnerable to start off with. So with all of these founders that you have seen come through the door, and I think the CPG industry has also seen a wave of ups and downs. In the, I think, 2017, 2019, it was very, very injected with VC dollars and the Warby Parkers, the Aways, they sort of came out from the pack. And then with the whole COVID thing, e-commerce was again on the rise. A lot of Amazon brands started to do really well. A lot of e-commerce accelerators grew out as companies. There's so many aggregators also that started to just wholly buy up these e-commerce brands that started from nothing in a couple of years. Where do you think e-commerce is now in 2024?
I think that things are going to get exponentially more operationally efficient. We were crawling, learning, okay, what's this thing called the internet? Okay, what's this thing called Amazon e-commerce? And what's this thing called sustainability? Like all these different things, right? There's all these different, what's this thing called AI? Am I sitting on the computer for 12 hours a day? Humans are really not supposed to be sitting on the computer for 12 hours a day. We should not be sitting on our phones at night with our families. That is not what the universe wants for us. I think that, and I know everyone has this like doom and gloom and fear on AI. I actually have no fear on AI. I actually think that part of the universe wants us to not be hunched over on our screens all day in a stressed state because this is not a natural way to be. So humans have invented something to make it more efficient so we can actually be in person with people. We can enjoy things. We're always going to find something else to do. We're creators. We're always going to find something to do with our time on Earth because that's what where lies fulfillment is, to be fulfilled, right? And to do something that matters and help others and build something that has a mission. So I think in terms of e-commerce, in terms of investment, all of that, I think it's just going to get exponentially more efficient. I think that just like you saw with the early internet days where there was like so many things, then like winner takes all, there will be the winner takes all next generation brands and the next Nestle, the next L'Oreal. I do think that there are those conglomerates happening in the background. That's super, super interesting to have a different take on beauty, a different take on food wellness. And I think that that's a really interesting opportunity as well. In terms of going towards happiness as the benchmark for your life, that sets you up for having expectations, because happiness is not actually a destination. It's wonderful, but there's no wrong emotion. Every emotion, there's a reason you have all these different emotions, anger, sadness, happiness. I've contextualized that being happy and showing your face on Instagram and saying, oh, I'm like this and this, and look at me, you know, striving and succeeding is something that society and everybody should give you accolades for. But really, at the end of the day, the reason we have all these different emotions is because your soul is trying to tell you something and your gut's trying to tell you something. So we're taught at a very early age to, okay, don't cry, honey. Don't do this. Do this with all your friends. Don't tune into like how you actually feel. Buy this, eat this, drink this, and then you'll feel better. And don't cry. And so I just think happiness is just another emotion. So just know that all your emotions, like whatever you're feeling, is actually just almost like a barometer of how you should rate your soul and your gut. And the reason you need to value your soul and your gut is because all of the answers live within inside of you. I used to go to, and I say, I'm looking for the business whisperer. And I still ask like the idea whisperer. And I go to all my more successful friends, or I go to business seminars and I sit up in the front and say, what business should I do? This is my background, and da-da-da-da. And I went to business school. And I'd be looking for so much validation, when at the end of the day, we are so lucky to even be alive in this time frame. And we were given powers as humans, and we actually, all the answers really live within inside of us. So anyways, on the happiness versus fulfillment piece, it's really important that you're looking for a life of fulfillment. Happiness is something that's expectations that set you up for happy, unhappy, black and white. In different stages of your life, you'll be fulfilled for different things. So just know it's an evolution, and it's not a destination. It is the process, and you're exactly where you're supposed to be, even if it's super frustrating and super triggering, or you're on the top of the mountain and you're winning, and then you're like, wait, what's next? I need a higher mountain to climb. It's all a really fun, incredible ride if you make it and you lean into just being and being happy to be now and really listening to what your soul's purpose is, because everybody has a song to sing. And that's part of the reason I built FounderMade, is I really want to help people really build and do good in the world with the ideas that they had to build.
I love all of that. If we can also go back to something that you were saying earlier, which is a lot of us are always asking external parties for validation for the answer, whereas actually all of the answers that we want to know lives inside of us. And I think some people have been able to tap into that because they got to know how to ask themselves, I guess, the right questions, versus some of us who have not. How do we look inward? What is the executionary part there?
I think the most important thing, and again, everybody taps into their intuition in different ways. And again, I actually didn't let myself really cry or feel until I had a bunch of trauma happen last year. So I feel like I just woke up a little bit. And so what I would say is, like, step one, you should feel all your feelings. So if you are crying, or if you were around someone, or you had a business, a conversation that you felt a little weird about, or you were around something that didn't feel right, instead of being like, oh my God, I need to go grab a glass of rosé and calm my anxiety, or I need to go shopping, or I need to be on my phone, tune in, take a step back and be like, hey, what is my body trying to tell me? We see so little of what the reality is. We have our little realities, and then everybody else has their little realities. So how do you energetically pick up on what's happening outside, but then how is it translating into your insides? So then number one is, there's no wrong feelings. Give yourself your grace and permission to feel, because once you start feeling and you actually stop blocking or busying yourself or striving, you'll actually get so much more intuition. So it's like, slow it down, feel it, feel what's coming in. I think that's like one of the just major things and major most powerful things you can do as a human, to tune in and to find the answers. The other piece is, and I know everyone says, oh, meditation, meditation, everyone has their ways, and there's like 50,000 million different things on meditation. Meditation can be in different ways. I find exercise for me is highly meditative. I didn't realize that. I'm somebody who, if I don't work out, I am a completely different person. So for me, I found that, you know, I actually don't like running at all, but I do these marathons because I'm called to do it emotionally. Before, I used to call them runcations. I'd be like, I'm an adventurer. I'm going to go and do all these like marathons all around the world. And it was like very striving. It was in striving energy. Now it's in much more therapeutic energy where I get so much wisdom when I hit mile 18 because my body and my mind no longer are in the world because it's so hard. And so I just did London Marathon 2 weeks ago. And I remember I had an anxiety attack on my, I told all my friends, I said, highly unpleasant. I don't lie. I literally need to tell people how it was. But for me, it was very meditative for me because I could tap into something, whatever energy, higher power, universe stuff, you know, on the run. But again, you can sit for silence and feel really uncomfortable for 30 minutes morning and night. And that could be a way of tuning in. Some people tune in by writing things, going in nature, hiking. I mean, there's so many ways to just get your answers. But I think also like what you can feel and like when you're in an expansive state and when you're in a contractive state. When you get in a contractive state, you should never make any decisions from that. You should never, if that's all fear. And so you really want to be in an expansive state when you're making any big decisions.
Okay. So I love how we went from super business things on the outer side of the onion and then drill down to exactly what Founder Made means at its heart, I think. And I think having these type of discussions, it gives people, I think, also another perspective too. You can go to the Founder Made website and see its exterior, but what's behind all of that is actually a lot of things that matter or what actually makes things continue versus the Facebook ads that we all invest in. So looking back now in time, if you were to give a piece of advice to yourself when you first started this whole thing, what would you say to that person?
Well, I would say number one, you're enough as you are. You're enough. You don't have to do anything more than what you are right now. Because I think that a lot of times entrepreneurs are humans, we're all trying to prove, we're trying to strive, we're trying to get love that our parents didn't give us, or we didn't feel like our parents gave us, or our rejection or whatever it is, because, you know, we're all trying to heal that hole inside of us. So I think I would just really say, listen, you're perfect right now, just the way you are. And also just don't judge yourself and don't be so hard on yourself. Let everything unfold and enjoy every moment and understand that it's not all about winning and it's not failures. It's all like winning and learning. You're never losing. I really believe like as long as you're above the ground and we're healthy, what is the worst thing that's going to happen in business? When people get really emotional about stuff, and I always appreciate it, but I also end up laughing like, guys, this is not life or death. Like this is, we get to play a fun game and we get to write a good album. As long as we're healthy and we're above the ground, we're totally winning. So that's what I would say, just for context.
And with that, thank you so much for spending your time and wisdom and all of these beautiful quotes that we'll probably write out in many things and print them on coasters. I don't know, maybe you'll hand that out as like a little tchotchke in your next Founder Made conference. B2B Breakthrough is produced by Alibaba.com. To find out how Alibaba.com is empowering its customers with the tools, services, and resources they need to grow their businesses, visit Alibaba.com. And then make sure to search for B2B Breakthrough Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your podcasts. Make sure to follow us so you don't miss future episodes. On behalf of the team here at Alibaba.com, thanks for listening.